This is Dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
This is Dialogue Assassination with Research Specialist Mae Bressel. For KLRB, I'm Gloria Barron.
I'm Mae Bressel.
Yes. We'll start right off, Mae. Last week, I think it was, we received a call from Buff Cody, Representative Burt Talcott's representative in Salinas, in his Salinas office, and telling Phil Kogan that the Washington offices had been deluged with mail concerning this program. They didn't know how to answer or what to answer all the mail that they had received. They wanted to know who is Mae Bressel. And the Senate Library wants copies of the tapes.
That's
now,
great.
I'll just turn that over to you, Mae, and maybe you can answer a few of those.
All right, please. I'll answer. You know, from the beginning of the show's glory, we've asked people to write letters to their public officials and tell them they want to know why national security is involved in not getting the truth about the Kennedy assassinations, and we told them to write about any subject that we mentioned, the evidence in Los Angeles about the Robert Kennedy assassination, the two weapons, and the ballistic confusion down there. We've covered a lot of things, and I've asked people to write, and they are writing, and Representative Talcott called that Washington is, his word was, deluged with mail. And I'm really proud of you listeners. You, most of you are under a certain age group listening to a rock station, and people think you're lazy or lethargic or you've dropped out, and it shows you're not dropping out and that you care about your world, and I am really very, very proud of you. And now I'm going to make a point. I'll tell you what I answered Mr. Cody, because he was to phone Representative Talcott. And I'm going to make a point to you in regard to that answer. Mr. Talcott is in Europe now till September 5th on a fact-finding trip. And I'm going to ask all the listeners now, don't write any more letters until Congress comes back into session. I told you, Gloria, that I sent out letters to every senator during Christmas vacation so that there would be information on their desk in 1970 about the assassinations. And between December and January, when they recessed, I had sent out 700 letters to members of Congress, first class. And the response to the letter which I sent out, which was also to law schools, writers, researchers, the response I got made that effort worthwhile. But not one member of Congress answered that 10-page typewritten letter I sent. And there are people in the intelligence agency in every office of every congressman. And if they would get a personal first-class letter, say 30 or 40, from one person, it would cause interest. But when 700 arrived, I am absolutely convinced that they were removed and thrown away from their bins. And not, I would like to speak to the men someday. I don't think they received them. And when I was in New Orleans with Jim Garrison a few years ago and was in the office where the man who had volunteered to help him was working, Tom Bethel, I saw a mail come in for Jim, and Tom would read it and throw it in the wastebasket. And this is at the time new evidence was coming in. And I was shocked. I was working over at the filing cabinet, and I said, what are you doing? He said, oh, these are letters from all kinds of people, and there's no, we don't have the money to answer. We don't have the staff. We can't handle all this, and he threw it away, and there may have been a links that Jim Garrison could use. So I'm going to ask everybody, if you hear something on the show today, and I hope you do it every day, make a note and write a letter, and where the post, because if you do it a month later, you lose interest, and where you place the postage stamp, put a date, September 15th, and mail it that day, anytime around that time when they get back. That doesn't mean the congressmen are going to see it, but they won't stand a chance. This, I can go, every week we promise an hour show, an hour of this, an hour of that. we could talk about the handling of the mail from my personal experiences. So write your letters. Do write them. They received them. But they're away now, and they're traveling all around. They're campaigning for 72, and they're at the beaches and all over the world. They're not going to see it, and the chances are they may never see it. It's not going to be on the top of their desk when they get home. So save it. Now, what I said, I called Mr. Cody because he was to call Representative Talcott, and they didn't know how to answer back there. And I said, Mr. Cody, this is a unique situation because for 7 years, people in Washington have had their cover stories on how to handle the researchers. They have their pat answers, and I'll read them to you. And I said, this is the time I don't fit into any bag that they have. And I think they know it back there because they really know who I am, and they have received other correspondence. And the times now are to tell the truth. So the pat answers don't fit. The first pat answer they always gave was national security, that we can't divulge what you want because of national security. And I said, we are on the air now 7 or 8 weeks, and I've broken down as well as I could that this is not a problem. We're not going to be invaded because of this. It's not going to hurt our foreign policy. This is the security of a handful of people over the majority of the people. National security will not, if the congressman write back, we can't go into it because of national security, that doesn't hold because the people know, and the tapes are going east, and people are making cassettes. And the people know, so that doesn't work. The next cover story they always use was no new evidence. Well, we read, I read on a show to you the fact that the area that I'm going into is all new evidence. Even at the minutes of the meeting of April 30th, Senator Cooper says the area that we're weak is the part of Oswald going to the Soviet Union, coming home, the State Department. That is the area I spent 7 years on. So if they say there's no new evidence, they haven't seen any of this evidence, and none of the books out have anything to do with the material that I've researched for 7 years, not one of them. The next cover story they use is loners are misfits and mercenaries are making a fast buck. I don't fit that description. I went into my background, my education, the university I went to, Stanford, my family's background, all the way back to my great-grandmother who founded the I. Magnin stores in San Francisco. And my family are fifth-generation California establishment family. A boy from Watsonville wrote, how can I convince my father about some of this? He's establishment. I wrote him back that I'm establishment, too. I have a huge home, a lot of bedrooms and baths and grounds and stocks and bonds, and I'm establishment, too, so I don't fit that bag anymore. They can't use that one on me. Now, then they have another cover they use. Our investigators convince us about thus and so. Well, at the April 30th meeting of the Warren Commission, and we'll refer to it on several shows, Gloria, over and over again, when Mark Lane and Thomas Buchanan were coming out with assertions about something that was happening in Dallas, this was the end of April, and the commission had 4 more months to work. Earl Warren suggested that we call the president of the Associated Press and the president of the United Press down to meet, to send a man to meet with the Warren Commission, and if they have any problems on their mind, the commission would go into them. And we'll repeat this several times because it's important. The way they handled the rumors of what they called rumors of Mark Lane, who had been down at the Grassy Knoll and talked with witnesses and had an altogether different picture, Earl Warren didn't say, let's call in Mark Lane and Buchanan because they have something that we don't know. They said, the way we will handle those people will be to call in the president of the Associated Press and the United Press. So they all they get is their cover story. If it is a CIA conspiracy, the cover story is set. So they say, well, this is what we have, and they're quoting themselves. So I said to Mr. Cody, there's only one way we can handle this, and I suggest it would be very nice if when Mr. Talcott returns from Europe that you come to my home with him, because he'll be going back to Washington, and by then they'll know even more about what we know, because I'm sharing it with you. And then he can go back and discuss it intelligently. So that was the gist of our conversation, and I will look forward. If he doesn't see me, if he's afraid to see me, because then he can say, well, I've seen it. If he doesn't want to see it, that's something different, because we're reaching the people now, and we'll go on and find the truth with or without Mr. Talcott. But because he represents us, in the area, I would like to think that he'd be the first congressman who has an opportunity to see my material.
It would be very nice if he would make that appointment. Let's hope that they can arrange that.
Yeah.
But it would take quite a bit of time, wouldn't it, May, to go through your...
Go through all that material? I wouldn't show him all of it, but I did, speaking of time, I did say to Mr. Cody, you schedule the appointments, but you may not schedule more than just 1 hour. You know, you have to give me 4 hours, have lunch, and stay from 1 to 5. And he said, well, Mr. Calcott's a very busy man. I said, never mind. You know, he's off in Europe, and he plays golf at Pebble Beach. And if you're scheduling 1 hour in my home, you're not invited into my home. Because I want, in 4 or 5 hours, I can show him something that he can take back to Washington as an intelligent man, not that he believes or disbelieves, but this is what she has, and he can't see it in less than 5 hours. He can't see anything in 5 hours, but he can get the gist of the extensive research, and he will know he has touched something very real. And then he can handle it from there, because there's no way now to sit on and pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I was thinking 4 or 5 hours is really a very short time. Our first meeting was like an 8 hour.
Yeah, we ran for 8 hours.
And that was just
did
sort
I
of cursory.
That, did yes. I talk that long? We have lunch.
Yeah. So yeah. Now we, Mr. Talcott is receiving the tapes, or he
we'll
will
receive
as,
them.
He
yeah.
will receive
when he
them.
Back. Yes.
And,
I'm also
and they are listening. We know that they are listening now.
Yeah, I'm also advising Phil at the station here to make copies, cassettes of them, and not to mail them to Washington, because nobody who would be interested in these tapes will see them till September. And there is no reason for them to look up stuff and rearrange it and have another cover story where they can get on the Associated Press or the news media and flatly refute this or that. They can sit with them at their leisure when they return, but there's no one now who would be able to handle this, who's in Washington. So we'll hold them up, you know, until September, and they'll all arrive when the men get back to work.
On one of the shows, was it the last one, May? You mentioned Jack Anderson.
Oh, we...
Yeah.
The news... The
Assassination Balderdash article.
Yeah.
There was... You brought out the fact that one... that our local papers here didn't carry portions of that article, and that the New Orleans paper did carry an extra added...
Yeah, we were talking about...
An extra paragraph, right?
Every week we talk about news control.
Yeah, right.
And what you do is some things never go over the AP-UP wire, and some papers delete what goes. And people say to me, well, why do you have to read 6 or 7 newspapers a day? If you finished your research, what good did the papers do? Well, on July 27th, 1971, Jack Anderson had an article about Spiro Agnew in Kenya, about how his aide was kicking up, having embarrassing him, and so forth. But at the end of the article, there was a column that was in the New Orleans paper. Now, Jack Anderson had a column that day in the San Francisco Chronicle, in the San Jose Mercury, the Monterey Peninsula Herald. And it didn't cover the last 3 sentences or paragraphs that the New Orleans paper did on the same date. At the bottom of the New Orleans paper, there's a lead article that says, Assassination Balderdash. Now, I went to the Random House Dictionary. The definition of balderdash is a senseless jumble of words or nonsense. Now, what was the balderdash that Jack Anderson wrote about that was in New Orleans? It wasn't in our newspapers. This is the article. A new and far-fetched theory of the assassination of President Kennedy, Senator Robert Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X is circulating on Capitol Hill. It is contained in a 14-page report buttressed by various documents, which was put together by Don Riley, a labor union employee and assassination buff from San Francisco. Its conclusion is that all 4 were killed by the same, in quotes, conspirators, CIA agents, anti-Castro Cubans, some Dallas police, FBI operatives, state rioters, Nazis, a clique of the very conservative businessmen, mostly oil, and right-wing religious leaders, end quote. Jack Anderson says, we have criticized every one of these groups at one time or another. But our own investigations convince us that this new theory, as earnest and ingenious as it may be, is pure balderdash. Now, at the time our shows were breaking here and we were talking about a weekly program discussing the assassinations and how they're newsworthy and they're in the news every week, and we want people to become conscious about these articles, Jack Anderson is saying that his investigation convinces him that this is wrong. Now, I want to make a statement because you come home, most people are working during the day, they have their dinner, they turn on the TV, and they open up the paper, and they read columnists like Jack Anderson, Tom Wicker, Harrison Salisbury, James Reston, Walter Lippmann, Rowan Evans, Robert Novak, and William Buckley. They read all these men, and whoever they like, crossing party lines, and they believe what they read. And those articles, these men, should be writing their opinions, like, my opinion is, Jack Anderson should have said, my opinion is that this is far-fetched. Or, I don't happen to agree with it, it seems too broad, or too many people are involved. That's my opinion. But he said that his investigation convinces him that this is balderdash. And so what I want to do today, and these tapes are going to Washington, and I will make an extra cassette to Jack Anderson, I want to challenge him in front of the people listening all over the country, these are going all over the country, that the columnists should put up or shut up once and for all, and that I will meet Jack Anderson's investigators of this 14-page document anytime, any place in the United States, and he can invite any 10 congressmen, no party lines, not radicals, not conservatives, to meet with us, 10 congressmen. Two or more should be black because he's mentioning Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And we will meet his investigators with me. Now, I have never known the name Don Reilly, Gloria. I know a lot of the researchers in the country. I've never heard of him. When I saw the article, I called Information in San Francisco to rap with him. He wasn't listed. So I wanted to get on, but it's more effective to me to meet them in Washington in the fall. His investigation, where he rules these people out, to say that I, Mae Brussel, in Carmel, never knowing a Don Reilly existed, finished my research on the John Kennedy assassination till where I was satisfied how it went. And it is exactly what that 14-page document has in Washington. And when I was all finished with the research that I wanted to do, to sit down to write five continuous books, each different on the subject, people would say, and I had to do this for my own head, well, Mae, what are your conclusions? How did it really work? People are making broad statements about the CIA, the FBI. What do you really think happened? And if you have a pencil, and if you have a paper, I will give you briefly, you and Jack Anderson, a rundown. I'm not going to name all the names. I'll name them to him in front of the members of Congress, but I will give you an outline briefly of the way the operation worked, the way I figured it out, which is identical to that 14-page document sitting in Washington, and I can't stress too much how I resent these columnists. Either they are part of the conspiracy, there were two conspiracies, one to murder and one to cover up, and many in the cover up, we know who they were in Life magazine or in New York Times or the columnists. If they're either part of the conspiracy to cover up, or they are stupid or uninformed. And I will inform Mr. Anderson, and I will catch him up on what happened if he is not part of the conspiracy to put him down. Incidentally, Jack Anderson could look in his files of Drew Pearson. He inherited the column. He used to work with him. I had five letters, and they're in my file, dated to Drew Pearson, to investigate particular Nazis in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that were involved in the assassination, and this correspondence was going on in 1964 and 1965. And I had telephone conversations with Drew Pearson, I have the dates at home, about the people that Don Reilly is mentioning now. So if you have a pencil and paper, I will give you a brief idea of how I will meet Mr. Anderson at the very top on the left-hand side. Leave your paper clean. I'm on the very top on the left-hand side, is a particular man in Army intelligence. And down below that name is J. Edgar Hoover, straight lined out. And below that name is Richard Helms and Alan Dulles of the CIA. Now, the agents of the CIA had two branches. To the left was Lee Oswald, who met with six particular people. And to the right was Marina Oswald, who met alone with five particular people who connect to the oil people and the Nazis, who connect to Army intelligence, motorcade, police, and secret security, and the decisions of where John Kennedy would pass that day. That's your left-hand column. Now, to the right, way over, is another man, a Nazi, a member of the John Birch Society, who gave a speech in Boston 2 years ago on the 4th of July that all Jews in this country should be vaporized. He was dropped from the Birch Society, at least overtly, because he came out too much in the open. And below his name is the name of another gentleman of the CIA who worked with, there is a connection here, with a group that have never been yet exposed that I refer in my research as the Munich Gang. They are military police. They are counterintelligence decoders who worked in Munich, Germany, and arrived in the Fort Worth area. The first one arrived in October 1962, and they filtered in a group of them. There were about 20 altogether that never were called as witnesses before the Warren Commission. The only one that was called before the commission will go into his name, and I'll tell you why he was called perjured himself, and I will read the perjury on the air and show you that I challenge Jack Anderson to go into my years of research, because I have a chart of the man from the CIA who worked with the oil people and where those people met with Ruby, who met with the Munich gang. I call them the Munich gang. And my diagram is so tight that I can refute anything in the Warren Report and back it up with thousands of pages of documents. Now, when we meet, Mr. Anderson and I ever meet with the Congressman Gloria, we'll turn to the Warren Report, page 292, describing right-wing groups hostile to President Kennedy. Now, Jack Anderson, July 27, 1971, is saying this is all balderdash, this theory about the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The Warren Report gave 6 pages on the right-wing group out of hundreds of pages of research, 6 pages into this area, and only called one witness out of many, many, many who could have been called. And this is what they said. Quotes, the commission considered the possibility that there may have been a link between Oswald and certain groups which had bitterly denounced President Kennedy and his policies prior to the president's trip to Dallas. But they went into the connections and they found no connection of Oswald to this group at all, except the fact that he had attended one meeting of General Walker's, a big rally. Well, in order to prove a conspiracy in Dallas, Lee Oswald didn't have to know any of the oil people at all. He didn't have to know any gunman on the knoll. He was on what we refer to as a need-to-know basis, Gloria. So all Oswald had to know to do a particular thing, which was namely to be a decoy, was to get a position in the depository few weeks prior to the trip to Texas. You had to have people decide which route you take. And there's a new book on that subject. We're going to do a whole show on how the Governor Connally insisted on taking this particular route instead of another. There's a new book that just came out. I read the review last night by men of the Secret Service, who had terrible guilt about Kennedy's death, and they're writing a new book. Oswald had to be in that building, and he had to leave the building, and the others were told, if the doors were closed, you can't leave, we're going to examine the building. And he would be picked up because he was the only one who left the building. That is a decoy. A patsy is when you plant the evidence against them, because he was very confident and cocky for 2 days. Then he panicked and realized what would happen. Then he was shot. But Oswald, the Warren Commission says, because he didn't know these oil people. But if the person in oil exploration was connected and introduced him to the people who got the job in the depository, we mentioned these names, he didn't have to know the other people. Then the Warren Report goes on. The day of the assassination in the newspaper, in the Dallas Morning News, was a blackboarded article said, "Welcome, Mr. Kennedy." And it was signed by Bernard Weissman of a fact-finding committee. And Mr. Weissman was called to say, why did you put this ad? It had P.O. Box 1792 and accused Mr. Kennedy of not favoring communists. It had many, many points. And they called Bernard Weissman to testify why he placed this ad. And Bernard Weissman, in his testimony, said, I came to Dallas in November 1963. As soon as he came to Dallas, he met the people who were to pay the money for the ad. They were members of the John Birch Society. They were to use him. He came out for the purpose, he said, to use my name because it was Jewish, the day of the assassination, Bernard Weissman. The committee didn't exist. They wanted a Jewish name to tie in with the cover story. Oswald was a communist. They could say all Jews are communists. So Reuben Weissman, they were going to use this thing and play it up later, maybe, and to instigate people to get excited. And after he placed the ad, he went home, back to New York. That was his sole purpose. And a correspondence of letters that he received from the people. Bernard Weissman came from Munich, Germany, and he was a group of this team that siphoned into Dallas. Larry Schmidt was the one who arrived in 1962 from New Orleans, wrote immediately to Munich. I was here the first night, and he met with these wealthy oil people and operators. We're in. We got more than we ever wanted. We'll be financed. Our goals will be set. Everything is set. And then just in November, he writes to New York to Brian Weissman, you have to come here now. We have to produce the bodies and run, or they won't believe us. We've got to get going. You know, this is now or never. And you will be briefed when you come to town, like I was, or Larry. He says, we will give you a briefing. And Bernard Weissman comes to town. Now, why, if the Birch Society believes that Kennedy is not giving the country a fair shake, why don't they just, if they're paying for the ad, sign their names? If they are honest conservatives, and they feel that Mr. Kennedy is doing the wrong thing, just say, I, Mr. Hunt, don't like what you're doing. Why do you have to use a Jewish name to hide your name? Or why don't you say the Birch Society disagrees with your policies because you're favoring communists? Why make up a Bernard Weissman said he had to write the name of the group on his cuff when he went to place the ad because he couldn't remember what it was. So they use him, and they gave him a pitch. This is interesting. They gave him a pitch, a letter to come to town now, and it's written by Larry Schmidt, and it was based on heroism. You've got to be a hero. I've put my head on the line. All great people do. You have to be willing to die for what you're doing. And he also wrote in his letters, Larry Schmidt wrote to these boys in New York and in Germany, when you arrive, don't talk your liberal talk or they'll catch on to us, and remember to call a nigger and not a negro. He talked about money to be received. They were well-heeled. They talked about the banks and the money they were saving and putting into the Republic National Bank. This is the kind of conversation that the public doesn't know about, Gloria, you see. So Bernard Weissman is, in the Warren Report, is telling how he came to the area. Now, all the commission wanted to do in ruling out a conspiracy is saying we went into the origin of the man who placed the ad, and he didn't know Oswald. Now, there is no reason in the world why Bernard Weissman would have to know Oswald, except that Weissman received letters from Larry Schmidt. We've opened this nightclub, and I have 20% interest in that nightclub, and I got Betty a job as a stripper in this club. If Lee Harvey Oswald knows those people in the nightclub, not Lee Harvey Oswald, if Jack Ruby knows those people in the nightclub and knows the oil people and is in their home and in their office and at their banks and sees them at the Mercantile Building and the Republic National Bank, and I'll name other places. If Jack Ruby knows the people that came from town, that's all that matters.
Excuse me, May.
Yeah.
You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with May Bressel.